It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and drives you towards your goals. Let your ideas flow with AI tools that guide you, but give you full control and flexibility. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. Get everything you need to turn your part-time passion into a full-time business. Go to Wix.com.
New job? Growing family? Need a change of scenery? When life gives you a reason to move, start with Opendoor. Request a cash offer in minutes. No prep work or showings needed. Or list with us and test the market with the cash offer to fall back on. You choose. Sell your way at Opendoor.com. That's Opendoor.com. Terms and conditions apply. Opendoor Brokerage LLC and Opendoor Brokerage in California, DRE 020-61130.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It was one of the most memorable moments in Irish sport for all of the wrong reasons, and it happened this day 30 years ago.
It's here. Anything like this was expected. The England players going off, shaking their heads. We've had some 28 minutes of play. And a terrible sight down there in that part of the ground. And any of you who know and have experienced the warmth of the Republic fans travelling in recent times around the world and not giving one iota of trouble will feel here that the England supporters, and I use that word advisedly, have created this stoppage that will make headlines sadly around the world and bring further evidence to the feeling that crowd trouble is back with us, when earlier in the 90s it looked as though the problem had been curtailed and controlled.
So there you go, headlines around the world and remembered 30 years on. That night, Jack Charlton said it was a disaster. I've seen a lot in football, I've never seen anything like that. Every Englishman should be ashamed. Terry Venables, who was in charge of England at the time, said, "There is no word to describe what I feel about people like that. It's sickening." Paul Lennon was there as football correspondent with the Star. Paul, remind us how it developed, because there was minor tension before, but this had the feel of being organised.
Yes, it was. I was just thinking back on it, Anton, in the last day or two, and looking up sources from that time. It was a horrendous night. It was a frightening night. And sadly, it was an event that should have been avoided. And just a quick scene set, unfortunately, going back to the early 70s through the 80s into the early 90s, there was a terrible problem amongst sections of English football fans. It was a small minority, but it was a minority that made a fortune, its effect around Europe. Within the English domestic game, there was a huge problem with hooliganism. And then the England football team, when they went abroad, when their clubs went abroad, there was trouble. We saw it with Liverpool in 1985 at the Heysel. And even up until the early 90s, when the problem was curtailed to some extent in the English game and abroad, there were still problems 15 months before the horrendous events at Lansdowne that night. 1,000 England fans were arrested in Rotterdam the night that they failed to get to the World Cup finals. They were beaten 2-1 by the Dutch, and there was whole-scale anarchy in
Rotterdam.
And as
I remember this game, it was about 20 minutes in. The players were removed from the pitch. Then the game was abandoned, and they effectively shepherded the Irish fans out of Lansdowne and then brought in a significant cohort of Gardaí who had to sort of wade their way into the English fans to regain control.
They did. David Kelly scored after 25 minutes. Then the game had to be abandoned after 27 when the English fans, there weren't too many of them. You're talking about a couple of hundred. There was about 1,600 English fans on the ground that night. Unfortunately, they were housed in the upper deck of the old West Stand and some in the lower deck. They began to rip up the seating, and they had other missiles with them. So they used the seating. They then used some of the other missiles that to rain down this barrage of missiles onto the lower deck of the West Stand, where, funny enough, some of their own fans were, onto Irish fans, and then onto the pitch. So it was absolutely horrendous. It was frightening. The media where we were in the middle of the upper deck, only maybe 30, 40 yards from it, and we had a bird's eye view of what was going on. And there's no doubt, people were frightened because there was
anger and the hate. I mean, as they were ripping up the chairs and there were shots of the faces, it was...
And Irish fans were beginning to run across the stand at the upper deck to get away from them. And at one stage, there was a feeling that there would be a charge by the England fans across the upper deck.
Well, you mentioned David Kelly scoring the goal merely 2 minutes before it was all called off. He's with us today. David, at what point did you become aware on the pitch that something was going badly wrong?
Yeah, hi, Anton. Good morning. It was really bizarre actually because we'd scored a goal. The goal had gone in, and we were obviously celebrating, walking back or running back towards the halfway line. Then of course the game kicked off again, and there was a little bit of a sort of murmurings in the air that something was happening, but. As players, you're just trying to get on with your job, and you don't really notice what's happening in the stadium and in the crowd.
And when the game was then postponed, you were taken back in the tunnel back into the dressing room. What was Charlton's reaction? Because reports suggest that he was absolutely fuming.
Oh, he was raging. I've seen Jack angry on quite a few occasions throughout my time with the national team, but nothing could ever come any close to how angry he was. And I think as well the overriding thing for Jack was the disappointment of it. You know, he was obviously a World Cup winner with England all those years before, and I just think that he just felt that these hooligans, these Combat 18 far right movement, which was what they were, had just completely ruined what was going to be a very, very enjoyable evening.
And of course, the Irish football team for many years has had an awful lot of people who would have been born in or grown up in England. What was their reaction to what the English fans were doing?
I think it was the same as everybody else. It was disgust. I think that would be the word that most people would use, because. You know, you go to a football game with your family to watch a match and to enjoy it. You don't expect for one moment that benches and steel bars and you know, bits of chairs are going to be thrown from an upper stand into a lower stand where supporters had mixed.
Text say I was in the crowd that day in Lansdowne as a Southampton fan. I was so looking forward to seeing Lagarde, aka Letizia, on a rare outing for England. I remember evacuating and going to the nearest pub for first reactions from Terry Venables. The aftermath then, after all of this, Paul, was it seen as being the fault of the FAI for not prepping? Was it seen as the fault of Garda and the security, or was it all the blame on the English fans?
No, I mean, obviously the primary blame has to be attached to the England fans, the dozens that became hundreds, because once you got a few dozen involved in an incident like this, I've seen it unfortunately over the years, then hundreds get involved. So the primary blame is that far-right element that did come across, as David said. The Combat 18, they were a neo-fascist group, had infiltrated the English fans. The English FA sold them tickets, so the English FA caused problems. Then the FAI also sold tickets that were returned by the English FA, unbelievably sold tickets in the England enclave to Irish fans. Some Irish fans were beaten up that night by English fans. So the FAI and then the Gardaí didn't cover themselves in glory either, because the Gardaí were getting very, very good intelligence from their English counterparts, actually naming the flights these people were coming in on, the ferries who were coming in on from Liverpool and Holyhead, and actually telling them some of the seats where these people were going to be sitting on. The Gardaí didn't take it as seriously as they should have. They didn't inform the FAI of the full intelligence data that they'd received from England. So, as I say, the FAI, the FA and the Gardaí had a lot of covering up to do. There was the government set up an inquiry by the former Chief Justice Finlay, the late Chief Justice Finlay, and he came down and apportioned blame to those three elements.
Although I suppose we do have to pay some tribute to the Gardaí who were in the stadium that night, because my recollection is that there was an awful lot of bravery shown in dealing with the people on the ground.
Once they got in control of the situation, the Gardaí were superb. They managed to, between them and the stewards and the FAI, they managed to get the 44,000, 45,000 Irish fans out very quickly, within 20 minutes, 25 minutes. They then surrounded the English fans and put them in their place, so to speak. They didn't hold back. They put them on Dart trains and buses back to Dunleary and put them on the ferries as quickly out as possible.
David Kelly, final word to you. I suppose the one good thing in this is that the fact that it is 30 years ago, it does to some extent, particularly in the international game, it feels like an entirely different age in football, because as awful as it was, it wasn't totally outside the scheme of what we were used to, whereas it's very unusual these days.
Yeah, I think that if anything good would have came out of the game itself was the fact that the stadiums were looked after better from there on in. CCTVs were introduced to every part of every stadium, which is what happens these days. And I think the overall organisation of all people, not just the police or the Gardaí or the FA or the Irish FA, it was very, very difficult for everybody to stop what was happening. But I think that, as I say, the bonus of it all is everything is so well cared for these days, and the stadiums became so much better.
And to what extent, in your quiet moments, do you think back on the possibility that, had the game not been stopped, you might be in that very small coterie of people who scored a 1-0 winner against England?
I'm still in it, because the game still counts in my house. You can never take a goal away from a striker, whether you took the ball or not.
The good news is, David, that FIFA recognised the 1-0 win and they recognise your goal. So you're officially got the goal and we got the win.
Fair play. Well, it is good to know that it isn't just in your house, David, that it is official FIFA that you got the 1-0. Fair play. David Kelly, thank you very much. That is David Kelly, of course, former Republic of Ireland international football player who scored that 1-0 winning goal against England 30 years ago today. Thank you as well to Paul Lennon, then football correspondent with The Star.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The New Balance Furon V8, crafted for speed, tested and worn by Bukayo Saka. Experience engineered minimalism at its finest and fastest. We updated the Furon V8 for even faster performance on the pitch. Same ultra-lightweight, precision strike-focused design, now with even greater sense of speed. A new speed control stud supports control during sudden stops, sharp pivots, and moves used by the fastest players, like Saka himself. Step up your game in the new Furon V8. Learn more and get yours at newbalance.com/soccer.